Coming up on this episode of the Leadership Lounge.
One of my friends, and I could say he developed into a mentor of mine, turned around to me one day and said, you can't be the magic in your business. You know, you have to duplicate yourself. And this was kind of the theme which came across with me. How do you duplicate yourself? How do you not become the magic in your business?
Welcome to Leadership Lounge. My name is Mitch Slater, Executive Director, UBS New York City, and I'm joined by my colleague, Saman Sami, First Vice President, Wealth Management from Dallas, Texas. And the best way to contact us is by emailing mitchslater@ubs.com or samansami@ubs.com. Our guest is not affiliated with UBS. The voice you just heard was that of our guest, John Grobler, serial entrepreneur and currently the founder and CEO of Global Footprints. He shares with us the lessons he learned from exiting multiple exits and the leadership skills needed to scale a successful business from zero to millions in revenue. Sit back, enjoy, and welcome to the Leadership Lounge.
John, thank you so much for joining the UBS Leadership Lounge podcast. I'd like to start at the beginning. Tell us the story behind Global Footprints, what inspired you to start the company, and what opportunity you saw when you first began building it.
Thanks, Sami. I really appreciate you guys inviting me to participate on the lounge today and share a little bit of my story. My story started back in South Africa. Global Footprints is really a culmination of everything I've ever done over the last 25 plus years. Initially, I started my career in IBM. I was exposed to enterprise systems and middleware at the height of the dot-com boom. And what stood out to me early was that companies weren't struggling because they lacked systems. They were struggling because, you know, systems didn't talk to one another. And that's, you know, IBM caught on to this and, you know, I learned from them just about systems. Fast forward, I ended up building a number of businesses in the mining industry, gaming and consulting. And I kept seeing the same thing over and over and over again. And with Global Footprints, I started venturing into large capital projects. And I saw there as well that they were running into the same things again. And that was fragmented data across ERP, scheduling tools, field systems. And, you know, it wasn't the leadership that failed. It was them not having real-time unified view of their data or their systems. And that's where the idea of Global Footprints came from. You know, we ended up building a platform to unify these environments and integrate data across all systems, workflows, and create a single source of truth and what I call a common data platform. Today, I'm evolving that platform into a construction solution, which provides real-time intelligence and efficiency for capital projects and capital owner operators to see the status of their business, their projects or capital programs. You know, it's about the know-how. Connecting things is one thing, but it's the know-how of knowing what to go get and how to get it and bring it together. And, you know, that's been the niche which Global Footprints cornered. I brought that over from South Africa through to America, the USA, and was very fortunate that I was able to expand this idea, this concept, this product, which I ended up building globally. Kind of where the name Global Footprints came from. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in the name.
Yeah, right. Makes great sense. So, Juan, tell us a little bit about you. You talk about, obviously, you brought this from South Africa. Is that where you grew up? You didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to start a company. So maybe a little bit of your background would be interesting.
Yeah. So, a little bit of the background. Grew up in South Africa to Italian family. I've always been entrepreneurial at heart. Even while I was at IBM, I was entrepreneurial. And, As I grew through the industry, I always wanted to own my own business, create my own value. That was one of the biggest things which really drove me. It's what kept me alive, if I can call it that. And I always thought I didn't know enough. I needed to spend more time learning. And I spent some time at IBM. I spent some time in corporate. But the real turning point in my life came when my son was born. The moment forced me to think differently about ownership, control, my future, and what I wanted to do, and that's where I started my first company called Fontanella Consulting. And the name Fontanella actually stems from my family name, my Italian family name, and I wanted to pay tribute to the family. And that's where I really learned how to build, win work, deliver under pressure, manage large programs like Anglo Platinum and Anglo American, And at the same time, I ended up founding two other businesses, one in the gaming and hospitality sector, and then Fontanella Project Management. And this was an intense period because, I was running both businesses at the same time, multiple businesses, stakeholders, clients demanding a lot of me. It was a high growth time. It was constant pressure. What I didn't realize was that gaming and hospitality really thrives in the holiday period, and corporate thrives in the normal Monday to Friday period. So I ended up working 24/7, truly, right around the clock, keeping all the clients happy. Incredibly intense, but also probably the most fulfilling time of my life. I learned so much during those earlier years. It taught me resilience. And more importantly, that I preferred building over operating somebody else's business. And that really was where I came from and how I rose up
to
be the business owner.
That's great. And that kind of leads me into what I was going to ask you about the fact that you've exited a number of companies over the course of your career. And as you're looking back now, some of these early experiences clearly shaped you as an entrepreneur, I can see.
Yeah, they certainly did. The things which really shaped me as an entrepreneur were just being a founder. You had to do everything yourself, okay, and there was nobody else but you carrying the can. And as the businesses grew, I found out that, complexity grows way faster than revenue. This was a real challenge for me, and it was a bit of a mind shift. So in the early days, I thought I could solve everything. And the scale of the two businesses, became more about me trying to create alignment, trying to bring people along with the vision, incentivizing, creating vision. And from a personal shaping point of view, it was learning. I had no personal mentor saying do this, do that, or watch out for this. It was really just the school of hard knocks, if I can call it. Culture was really important to me, and it still is really a big thing for me. And one of the hardest lessons I learned during this time was culture doesn't scale automatically. You have to actively build it. And, I had two very different businesses. I had the gaming business. I had the Fontanella business. The Fontanella business, I had a culture of family and building a family business and scaling that. And then I realized that family doesn't scale, And then I had the gaming business, which supported all the gaming floors in the southern sub-Saharan Africa area. And that required enormous amounts of process and alignment. And then I actually brought these two together, and I just realized, alignment was really a really big thing. So I then needed to move this on. And one of my friends, and I could say he developed into a mentor of mine, turned around to me one day and said, you can't be the magic in your business. You have to duplicate yourself. And this was kind of the theme which came across with me. How do you duplicate yourself? How do you not become the magic in your business? And so this came one of the hardest lessons, to trust people, even when they don't do things exactly the way you would want them done. You have to trust. And so that was what helped me grow, that would help me scale the businesses. I think that's what shaped me to where I am today.
It kind of answers some of the questions I was going to ask you, because entrepreneurs always talk about grinding and building a company. You just mentioned culture. You just mentioned trusting people. Did you have a mentor at all during the course of your career that may have taught you some of these leadership skills, or it was just trial and error?
I'd say in the beginning, it was trial and error. It was, you know, coming out of college, coming out of IBM, thinking I knew it all. I was a GWS consultant and I could do it all. Learned very quickly that, you know, the client is always right and the client process is different. And then I ended up learning more about, you know, sales and focusing on sales. And then I ended up getting a couple of mentors in my life, and I wouldn't call them formal mentors, but people I really looked up to, you know. And I could name two people which mentored me through the process, you know, mentored me in leadership, taught me kind of the principles I live by today, and I'll share as I go along. But they're really important in the sense that you need a mentor, you need a coach. And I realized that I needed somebody to show me the ropes. So I had a business mentor, and then I had a leadership mentor, and they were personal friends of mine as well. And so I would spend a lot of time talking with them and sharing it. And then, of course, anybody else I came into contact with through my career, which had a position in an organization at a higher scale, a higher perspective than me, I always took the time to learn from them, to listen, to ask them questions. And so I suppose to answer your question straight up, I had many mentors in the end, as I grew through.
Right.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And mentors are extremely powerful. I certainly would not have had a career like I've had in a few different industries without mentors that make a difference. So you've clearly successfully gone through a number of exits, and many founders kind of only experience that once. So what did these exit experiences teach you about timing, preparation, and knowing when it's the right moment for you to sell?
All I can say is each of my exits have been a classroom experience.
Yeah.
You know, for me, when I started out, you know, Fontanella as a young man, building the business, I never really focused on any equity. I never realized the equity to an exit. I never even thought about it. You know, I was really just about growing the business as much as I possibly can, creating a legacy for my family. But then I received that first call, you know, that first call from somebody outside of the world, which said, "Hey, I really like what you're doing. And, you know, would you consider talking to us about selling or joining our organization or a strategic partnership?" I mean, however that intro comes across to you. And, you know, I always learned that, you know, it's always worthwhile listening, you know? So I took the call, absolutely. I would always say, yes, I would listen, you know? And I suppose that first time I got that call, I got caught up in the valuation. And then my thinking was, you know, what would this liquidity event mean for me and my family? And I suppose that's where founders come. You know, you get that first phone call, you've slogged away at this business for so long. And, you know, somebody wants it. Somebody sees value in what you've created, and you get caught up in it. And you know, this brings me to the first exit. And I got taught a really hard lesson about control during this time. I found out that I was in a structure after selling that I didn't control. I didn't control the outcome. And that directly impacted my return, and that was the number one lesson, timing, really just didn't even consider the timing at that point. The second exit, which I was very lucky, came a few years later for Fontanella. I ended up getting a call to join a listed entity and a listed company. And this time around, I had a lot more posture. I had a lot more concern with regards to the structure and how the deal would come about. I wasn't too caught up in the valuation of the business at this point, but really just trying to find the right deal for me and my staff. And once again, I mentioned this was, I was trying to create a family culture here. And so the people who worked with me were really important. I needed to find the right fit for them and that they would be able to grow to be more than what they were with the Fontanella, but really extend themselves. And so I ended up selling to the listed entity. And this was the next lesson I learned. What taught me here was, corporate environments, revenue recognition, internal competition, and politics. These are all the things which play in a large corporate. These things can materially affect the outcome of your earnouts and how the deal is structured. I should have known a bit better at this point to say, IBM often had the saying that it was harder to sell internally than to sell to the client. When you sell your business to a corporate, you're competing with other companies, other divisions, and that internal sell really played on your return. So that was the second lesson and the second exit, which I learned from. And then I was very lucky bringing the company back to the US. I had my third exit, my third chance, the third bite of the cherry. And I approached this completely differently. I focused on the structure. I focused on the alignment. I was looking for the control. I was looking for the cultural fit. All these lessons I'd learned in the past. I ensured that I had visibility and influence over the earnout process, and I had a very tight structure and set of terms that would work, and I knew I could deliver to, and I knew I could defend, and that made a significant difference, and in the end result. And so, that's what the multiple exits taught me.
A lot of the business owners we work with, the ones that we've seen being very successful have ran their companies exit ready, beginning with the end in mind, and.
Yes.
They every quarter do, what if we were to get sold today? Like what it would, like that's how they run the company. But what do you think for other business owners listening or founders, what are some of the things that they misunderstand about the exit process when they build their companies?
Sammy, I think you mentioned a good thing. I would say where I am today, if I built the company, I have the vision of how would I exit, and I think to shift from founder to concept, to build your business and just have clients build it and not think about the exit is where maybe 80% of founders find themselves today. Because why do you start a business? And then you have those which have been around the block a few times who have this view of, hey, we're building this to exit. And so there's two focuses. I'd like to talk to those founders who have built the business and built something bigger than what they thought, and somebody coming over to them and saying, hey, we're interested in buying you, or you're looking for an exit. What are the misunderstandings for those guys? And one of the key things I'm going to say is don't focus too much on the valuation. Focus on the terms. The reality is the structure of the deal will determine the outcome far more than the headline number for you. I think they also underestimate what happens after the deal closes. You know, the exit is not the end of the deal. You know, it's the beginning of a completely new dynamic where that owner, CEO may not be in control anymore, you know, especially if there's an earnout involved. And this is where I think most founders get caught out or CEOs get caught out. You know, cultural fit becomes critically important. You're not just selling your business, you're stepping into someone else's operating environment. If there's misalignment in how decisions are made, how people operate, or what success looks like, it can really make a material impact to that earnout period and make it extremely challenging. And what I've seen in the M&A market broadly is that cultural alignment is often the key factor in whether deals actually deliver value or fall short. You know, if the owner's unhappy, the CEO's unhappy, the staff's unhappy, you know, that's the whole division which just is underperforming and they don't like that environment where they find themselves. So it becomes really important to focus on that. The other thing I always emphasize is clarity and intent. And that really talks to what you mentioned up front. You know, before you enter the deal, you need to be very clear about what you want out of the liquidity event. You know, is it financial security? Is it growth and scale for the business? You know, you're looking for a capital injection, or is it staying involved or just stepping out? Or is this my retirement? Is this my swan song? Mm-hmm. They're all equally important. And what it does is that, you know, if you hit your earnouts, great. But what happens if you don't hit your earnouts? Is this the end all be all for you? So my simple advice to people here is optimize for alignment, not just price. Alignment on structure, incentives, culture, and expectations are really important to consider right up front. You know,
it's great
because ultimately, that's what determines whether the exit feels like a success or a regret.
Mm-hmm. So since we call this the Leadership Lounge, I'd love to talk a little bit about leadership for a moment. So talk a little bit about the way you approach leadership and decision-making today versus maybe 15, 20 years ago. What, mm-hmm. you know, I know Sammy asked you about mentors. For some people, there's books that have been very influential with them with leadership. So we'd love to hear a little bit more about your take on leadership and decision-making.
Yeah, thank you. You know, this comes to one of the questions where I managed to have a mentor on leadership, you know, and he really changed my view on leadership. So just early on in my career, I was focused on building, selling, buying, delivering, you know. But over time, I just realized that leadership isn't just about what you do. It's about what gets replicated around you. And this became one of the key points of leadership. You know, I developed a very strong belief that every business ultimately duplicates from its leader. So if there's a poor leader at the top, that behavior cascades throughout the organization. And the opposite is true for a strong leader. Values-driven leadership creates strong alignment in the teams. And we see this in all aspects of life. You know, everything duplicates. And that's the word which I always play in my head. Everything duplicates. So for me, leadership is about example. Okay. I live by a simple philosophy. Your walk talks louder than your talk talks. Okay. So you can communicate values all day long. If your actions don't align, people won't follow you. And that's just pretty much it. And that's how you build your culture. That changed how I operate. You know, I focused on consistency. I focused on integrity and being deliberate in my actions because, you know, I know that ultimately shapes the culture of the organization. People want to perform and the business will thrive. And I think that's one of the biggest shifts in my leadership journey, you know, from driving outcomes myself to building an environment where the right behaviors result and scale beyond me. And last point I want to say, there's always somebody watching you, no matter who you are, where you are. So,
right.
Well, since you bring that up, I'm going to throw a little add on here because, you know, it's hard in 2026 to not talk about leadership and business without AI. and you've experienced pre-AI and AI.
Yes.
Curious about your thoughts on leadership in this AI universe.
AI, I have a view coming from the IT world that, there's nothing really new in IT except new functions, new tools, new add-ons to this world. And, I had a meeting the other day with one of my partners, and we were talking about, big data, or let's just say data warehouse, big data. And now we come from big data to AI. It's about data. It's about big data. It's about managing big data and about a person's ability to absorb all that data. And AI is a fantastic tool which helps people absorb data. It summarizes data, but it needs to be tempered because it's not always correct. It's not the end all and be all to your truth. But it certainly helps a leader get a lot of information really quickly and run down a particular research line. So if you're looking for a particular opportunity, AI will help you get that information. It will help you find the sources. If you utilize it as a tool, it could be the most powerful tool for leadership because it gives you the information. And we all know that leadership is about information, having the right information at your hands at the right time to make the right decision. And the problem with leaders is that, yesteryear, when before AI, before there was a lot of data, or there was something to summarize it, we had to go through this manually and it took time. And so you could only make a decision based on what you wanted to make a decision on. And I can safely say that I don't think there is a golfer out there who gets down over a golf ball and says, "I'm going to fluff the shot." And I don't believe there's a leader out there in the world which is going to say, "Hey, I'm going to go out and make a bad decision." Nobody goes out with that. Everybody goes out with a good intention to make a good decision. It's just about the environment and what data you have. And do you have all the information to make that decision effectively? And I think AI can truly help leaders make decisions way more effectively if they use it in a manner which is understanding that it is not the gospel truth. It is a tool, and it leads us to find information a lot quicker.
Great. Love that.
That's a great, great perspective. John, building and exiting companies is intense. And outside of running global footprints, what are some passions and interests that help you keep balanced and energized? For me, I always use the word corporate athlete. I want to take care of my body and soul and sleep, and because I can't perform in the office if I don't. But for you, what is it that keeps you balanced and energized?
Sammy, it's like comes back to that point where your walk talks louder than your talk talks. In my younger business days, I had a younger family, and I was extremely fitness orientated. And early on in my life, I ended up performing in mountain biking and really competing on the world stage in mountain biking. And that was a wonderful opportunity to encourage my children to do sport. I wasn't going to tell them to do sport. I was going to say, "Watch me. I do sport, and you can achieve." But sport takes its toll on your body. As you get a little older in life, you take a few falls, and the broken bones are not that fun anymore. So I have a new passion, and the biggest passion I have now is aviation. It's a really big passion of mine, and flying really forces one to be completely present. There's no room for distraction. You're constantly thinking ahead. You're managing risks. You're making decisions in real time. One of my instructors once said to me, "You got to stay ahead of the plane." It was a concept I had to think about. What does he mean by stay ahead of the plane? And it's interesting here because the faster you fly, the more you have to think ahead, the more you have to stay ahead of the plane. You know, it's one of the few environments where you truly can disconnect from everything else. And so aviation's become a wonderful passion, and I love flying. I really love it. It's my happy place.
That's amazing. Do you have any planes?
I do. I have a little Cirrus 4-seater,
Awesome.
and I love flying it and just going to places where, you know, never thought I could go. It's really cool.
That's awesome. All right, so you've built companies and created value, had successful exits. You've had a lot of things going on. You have an impressive career. When people look back at your career one day, what kind of legacy do you hope that you leave behind?
Oh, legacy. My legacy really is, you know, it's about building meaningful businesses. It's about creating real value. It's solving real problems. But most importantly, enabling others to succeed, you know. I want to be that manager. We all have that manager. We all have that boss, which we look back upon, or even that school teacher, that we look fondly back on and say, hey, that person really lifted me up. They lifted me up. They helped me. They taught me. And I'd love to be that for one or two people. And it's an honor. And you'll never know if I ever am that person for them, but I would very much like to leave that legacy for somebody. I want to be known for integrity, consistency, and a vision and a long-term mindset. So that's my legacy.
That's great.
And that ties really well into what I like to call the billboard question that we typically end with at the end of the show. So you are granted a message that you can put on a billboard that every entrepreneur in the world would see every day. So, Juan, what would it be and why?
It's such a simple one for me. People don't follow what you say, they follow what you do.
That's good. That's a good one.
That's a great
That
one.
might be the most confident answer we've had on the show.
I think we got to get this guy a billboard. That is really good.
Can you
Wow.
elaborate a little bit on that?
It comes back to your walk talks louder than your talk talks. Okay. It talks about culture. It talks about just everything in your life. You know, your love life, your business life. Talk is cheap. We've heard the saying. You know, walking the talk is really difficult. You know, let's put it in a business context. What does it mean to sit across somebody in a business discussion, stand up and shake hands and say, the deal is done? That means something to walk away and say, my word is my bond and I will walk my talk.
John, really appreciate the conversation, especially your perspective on leadership, culture, and why the structure of a deal matters just as much as the valuation. And love what you are doing with the Save the Redwoods Foundation. That is what really matters in life. Thank you again for joining us on Leadership Lounge. And to everyone listening, don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time in the Leadership Lounge.
Thank you for joining us on the Leadership Lounge with Mitch Slater and Saman Sami, powered by UBS. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation and gained valuable insights to fuel your own success journey. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and share the episode with anyone looking to grow as a leader. And stay tuned for more exclusive stories and strategies from the world's most inspiring business minds. Until next time, keep leading with purpose.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc., offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.